Hello everyone. Today is April the 28th, 2021, and this is a Whole Life Healing Call with Dr. Alex Floyd. And my name is Johanna Chan. I'm going to be assisting Alex today as he answers your questions, interacts with you, if you like, about any of his deep waters topics or even the New Jesus topics. Before we hear from Alex and you, though, I want to share this disclaimer. This presentation is for education and informational purposes only, and since we're going to be talking about issues of health and well-being, we wanted to make sure that you understand this information is not intended to heal or cure anything. Everything in the presentation are the opinions of Dr. Alex Floyd or myself, Johanna Chan, or possibly you if you share. You should always check with a licensed healthcare provider about any specific health concerns you may have. So we're doing something a little different today with our controls. Alex, I'm going to go ahead and ask you to speak, and hopefully everything will run smoothly.
Okay. All right. If I'm understanding correctly, I think I did this wrong last week, but if I'm understanding correctly, the teachings for this week are being lonely, being single versus not single, and value and belief, value and worth in the New Jesus teaching. So real quickly, being living alone, single or not, there's pros and cons both ways, and lots of people who are single don't want to be and think they'd be happy if they weren't single, and a lot of people who aren't single aren't happy and think they would be more happy if they were single, but for whatever reason they're staying together anyway for other reasons. And I believe it can go either way. I believe you can be happy single. I believe you can be happy obviously with someone else in a committed relationship, but what you need, no matter which of those you're in, is to live the positive life where you're going to experience excitement, adventure, love, joy, peace, pain, tears, yeah, the whole thing, but you're going to have a life so full it's busting at the edges, no matter which of those you do. But there are a lot of common sense things that people seem to not realize who are in either relationship or single and unhappy about it. So watch the teaching. I tried to do a lot of research to determine what those things are that are problems in both situations and what has to happen, you know, for you to be in happy and healthy, your best life. The value and worth, and I apologize for the length of this. I keep saying these are going to be short, and they haven't yet. My intention is to start that with the one this week. But the teaching you saw on YouTube, or if you go there now, if you haven't seen it, it's long, and I apologize for that. But I didn't know how to do this one short, because everything in your life is about what you value and how you measure worth, both in yourself, in your career, in your relationships, in your hobby time, in everything. Everything is determined by what you value most and the method in which you determine worth or no worth, okay? And it's all about your beliefs. God said that in the Bible. Bruce Lipton said that from Stanford Medical School. Many others in all walks of life, all faiths, pretty much everything you can find. Whether your life is a wonderful one or a tragic one is by and large determined by your beliefs and how you act on those beliefs, okay? And it's absolutely crucial. And I don't know that you can ever change anything until you change your belief first. I remember years ago, and a lot of you probably are sick of hearing this story. I've told it in at least one of my books and a number of times outside of the books, that I was having dinner with Mark Victor Hansen, the co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, and he said, "Alex, do you know what the top-selling category of books is every year?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Diet and weight loss." I said, "Oh, okay, I can see that." Then he said, "Alex, do you know who buys the diet and weight loss books this year?" "No, Mark, I don't." And he said, "Same people that bought them last year. And the people that buy them next year will be the people that bought them this year, because they don't work." So there's a big, big difference in living your life trying but not doing what works. And that's one of the biggest things I find with my clients, and have over 30 years, is I would probably say virtually all of my clients over those years were trying. So what does that tell you? If I have thousands of clients, all of them are trying, but virtually none of them are happy, content, fulfilled, etc. Well, to me, it says they're not trying the right thing, and I believe that is the case. To make any kind of change in your life that is significant and positive, you I'm not going to say 100%, but probably 99%, you've got to change a belief before you are able to do that. And the negative beliefs that you have, and we all have them, your unconscious mind prioritizes them over the truth and the positive beliefs, because they're connected to your survival instincts, okay? So if your positive belief says, "No, I'm not going to eat a half gallon of ice cream today because I'm trying to lose weight," all right, your unconscious mind, which is a million times more powerful than your conscious intention, says, "No, no, 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 things are okay. Have the half gallon today. We'll start it tomorrow. We'll start that tomorrow." And then tomorrow never comes. Or it comes, but then 6 months later, you're right back into the same routine and overweight again. Why? Because you didn't do it right. You didn't change the belief first. All right? So the teaching this week in the New Jesus is how to diagram any belief for any area of your life that's causing you problems, and then how to start working to fix it. And I give 10, count them, 10 different diagnostics in this week's teachings for you to determine exactly where you are in your life, then how to diagram a belief that's causing you problems, and then how to fix that belief, change that belief, so that you absolutely can lose weight and become much more healthy, or you can start working toward another job that you've always wanted to do, or you can start interacting with someone who your relationship is not what it should be in order to improve it and do it the right way so that you end up closer than ever, all right? So I apologize for it being long, but I don't think there's any way I could have done all three of those things in any less time. The 10 diagnostics, the belief diagramming, and then the actual treatment to start to change those beliefs to what is true and what will cause you to be successful if you follow that path. So that's it for me, Johanna, if anyone has a question or comment.
Okay, Alex. Well, I believe this teaching was also called Real Change, is that correct?
No, it wasn't.
It has the 10 diagnostic thing. It sounds like what you're describing. It has the chart. It's a long.
Okay, well, I'm on YouTube right this second. It does. It says Real Change. Yeah. It does say Real Change. Okay, so that's okay. The right one. But on YouTube, It says real change there too. Okay, so yeah, that's the name of it. I'm sorry. Value and worth is more once you start playing it. It'll tell you some of that stuff. But yeah, you're right. The name of it is real change.
Well, we have a question. Were you able to read the question that Marilyn sent in?
I read it an hour or two ago. I have not read it recently. Do you have it in front of you?
Yes, I do. Let me.
Okay, go ahead and read that again.
It says, on the Real Change video, Alex asks, how do you have change? And then says that the number one thing to him is to get right with God. If you need to repent, confess, ask for forgiveness, etc., do it. Get right with God. That is first. But he also says later in the video, these mess ups are built into us. God knew we couldn't do it right. God knew me. He loved me, and he paid my price all before the foundations of the world. So the problem was never guilt or sin. So my question is, God knew I can't do it right. So why do I need to confess, repent, and ask for forgiveness when I didn't or don't get it right? I feel like I am back in religion with this. If I commit myself to love God, loving Jesus and living in the now as best I can, why is that not being right with God?
Yeah, great question. And to me, the stuff that feels religious, in quotation marks to me, is, okay, you have to go to church once or twice or three times a week. You have to read your Bible X amount. You have to do this, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that. And then what I call love A versus love B, where the way I'm living is, if I do good, I get good. If I do bad, I get bad. All right? That's all religious. And this is involved in every religion, including Christianity, that I've ever seen. All of that stuff. All right? To me, what I'm talking about is a relationship with God. All right? And in a relationship, Johanna, if I do something in my relationship with you, Johanna, that causes you extra work, or that makes you feel bad about yourself, or that I was supposed to do for something you and I are working on together, but I didn't get it done, or I didn't get it done right, well, what is... If I want to maintain a good relationship with you, Johanna, what do I do? If I make a mistake and somehow it hurts you, what is the normal thing for me to do, Johanna? What would you think?
Well, if I knew what I'd done, yeah, I'd ask you for forgiveness.
Well, no, what I'm saying is I'd say I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I mean, good cow. When I was, this movie may have been made before I was born, but when I was really, really little, there was this movie called Love Story with Ryan O'Neal and someone else. And the main line of the entire movie, and they emphasized it several times, is love means not having to say you're sorry. Okay? Well, let me just tell you, that is the biggest crock of baloney I've ever heard in my life. Now, maybe if you're in a fantastic relationship where you both totally, almost 100% get each other, can finish each other's sentences, stuff like that, in a situation like that, maybe you don't have to say you're sorry because they know you are. But even in that situation, you would still say, I'm sorry. Even if you know they know you're sorry, okay? It's kindness. It's courtesy. It's treating someone else like I would want to be treated, okay? So to me, it's not religious at all. It's saying, oh, Father, I am so sorry. I know I was not supposed to do that, and I just messed up. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. And then the very next thing is, thank you so much for having paid for that already so that, you know, I can be not guilty immediately. But to me, now everyone defines religion in different ways, but to me, that's kind of how how I see it, and it's not religious at all to me. It's saying I'm sorry to somebody that I love. That is the least that I would do in any relationship with someone that I love, is say I'm sorry if I mess up something. So I don't see that as religious at all. I see that as one of the most common things you would do with anyone on planet Earth that you love, or even if it doesn't rise to the measure of love, you would still say I'm sorry, unless it's like an enemy that you just want to offend. So to me, that's not a have to, like if you do this you're going to hell or something. I don't think that's true at all. I think it's just what you do in a relationship. If you offend the other person or make a mistake that causes the other person trouble or whatever. So to me, that's 100% about relationship, not religion.
Right. Okay, well, here's a hand up. I'm going to open the line. I think it's Santa. Santa? Well, okay. Your line's open, Ontario. Hello? Okay, so I don't know. Maybe they're on mute. Are you on mute? Okay, I'm going to open another line. I think this is Glenn in California. Let me open your line. Your line is open, Glenn.
I am open. Hi, Johanna. Hi, Dr. Alex. How are you doing?
Hey, Glenn.
We got great weather here, Dr. Alex. I hope you do, too.
We're doing fine, Glenn. But I'm so happy for California.
I bet you are. You know, are you saying you don't remember that one of the biggest movies of all time that had that goofy phrase to it with Ryan O'Neal and Ally McGraw?
Yeah, Ally McGraw. Oh. She was the other one. Yeah, love story.
There you go. I was just a kid when that came out, but that didn't make any sense to me either. I think that was the whole point of it, to get people talking about it and thinking about it, so you'd be thinking about the movie.
Yeah, probably so.
I wanted to ask you, when you are changing beliefs, working with beliefs change with people, do you find that it's something that happens gradually over time, or do you notice that sometimes you'll have a pop and it'll change immediately?
I would say with the people that I've worked with, probably 90% of them have a change in 2 weeks or less. With some, it's a day. It really depends on how controlling is this person versus a person who is extremely trusting. That's the continuum. If a person is extremely controlling, it takes longer. If a person is very open and trusting, it may take a day or two. But on average, 2 weeks or less. And that's to change. And that's to change one major belief.
Isn't that the belief the foundation of the behavior? I mean, whatever it is, if someone was traumatized or something, and they have a belief that they're messed up or that they can't heal. Once that belief gets cleared up, won't that start moving the healing energy to be able to do its thing?
Yeah, it absolutely will. Every belief is usually made up of a whole bunch of different data points from a number of different memories. So this was passed down from my ancestors. I don't even know what that is, but it affects my feelings and thoughts in my unconscious. There's some that is unconscious to me, even though it happened in my life because I was real young or because it was traumatic and I've repressed it. There's a whole bunch that I do remember, all right, but I may not remember the truth of it. You know, the recent research says 50% of what we believe is not true. But yes, all of those different events and memories and people and things that have happened to us, things we've watched on TV, things we've imagined, all of that is in our memories, and the beliefs come from the memories. So we may have 5,000 memories that have that say something about, what's the topic? Money. We may have 5,000 different memories that say something about money. And in those 5,000, some directly contradict each other. Like one belief might say, man, money is the key to life. Get as much as you can and never look back. The other one says, money can be one of the worst things in your life. If you get focused on money and not people, boy, be really careful about prioritizing money. Well, those two beliefs conflict. They're mutually exclusive. You can't believe both of those at the same time. So what happens, unfortunately, is the negative belief with the lie in it gets prioritized by the unconscious, so it gets moved up into the top 10 when it comes to money. And the positive one that is the truth does not get bumped up to the top 10. It may be in the bottom 10 or the bottom 20. And so we tend to have a skewed version of things, most of us, without even trying to, just by the devolution of our memories, the way it's happened over thousands of years. But anyway, to change that, you've kind of got to get all of it out on the table, so to speak, and see what kind of put your memories all out on the table in some way, shape, form, or fashion, and then just sort of pray and meditate over them every day. And one of the secrets I found is do not try to change a belief with your willpower. It'll backfire almost every single time. No. Yeah, plus, you can't. You might think it's changed, but then in 6 months it comes right back because it wasn't really ever changed. What you do is you pray and meditate over it every day, just like clockwork, like brushing your teeth or something, and one day you will discover yourself having a changed belief. And it'll be, look at that. I believe this now about this thing. I don't ever remember believing this, but it feels good. And, okay, let's go. When that happens, it's almost always permanent, and now you're on to the next thing. If you try to do it with your willpower, almost always it will backfire. And almost everyone I know who is in the kind of belief-changing business, they try to do it through willpower.
Wow. Yeah, and willpower, as we can see, willpower doesn't work, because if you could have changed it, you would have changed it.
That's right, and that's Dr. Lipton's thing, is that the odds of trying to change something with your willpower that you've not already been able to change before is roughly, and he figured this out all clinically and everything in the lab at Stanford, it's roughly 1,000,000 to 1 that you're going to be able to do it with your willpower. Now, I would say probably at least 30% of the time, maybe 50%, people will work on it with their willpower. It'll feel significantly better. They'll think they've changed it, and then 6 months later, it will relapse and sometimes be worse than it was originally. So, yes, that is the fatal flaw that almost everyone I know makes, including preachers, including pastors, including therapists, is trying to change it with willpower, and it won't work. But there is a way that it absolutely works consistently and predictably.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Alex. And, another
okay,
great
Glenn.
Commentary. And And by the way,
love you, man. Thank you.
I love, and when you say you talk too much, you only talk for 10 minutes. I love it when you expound upon things. So please don't rein yourself
in.
I meant the
YouTube. It's like 2 hours long, the one this week. That's what I meant.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay, yeah. Great. We just love your commentaries. Love
well,
it.
Well, thank you.
Have a great week.
You too. Go ahead.
Thanks, Glenn. Okay, so I'm going to try this number again. One more question. I think it's Santo. I'm trying to unmute his line. Are you there,
yeah,
Santo?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. One thing that did come up for me with this, and it may not be entirely related, but it did come up. Because I know we talked about how you're not responsible for the thoughts you have. You're responsible for the thoughts you keep.
Yeah, that's right.
What does that kind of look like in terms of keeping those thoughts? Because I know, like, in my own life, when, negative thoughts would come up, and it feels like right when they come up, it's like I get that immediate kind of reaction to them that I kind of want them to go away, and it feels like they stay there for, you know, a period of time. It feels kind of like this battle of trying to, like, make them go away. And they kind of feel like they're just sitting there, and they feel like real at the time. So I wanted to just get kind of a deeper dive into what that kind of means in terms of keeping them.
Yeah, that's a great question. Probably the biggest struggle of my life has been sexual lust, especially when I was a teenager and college and younger ages. And I mean, it was an every single day battle and war for me. Okay. And of course I know this is true for a whole lot of guys. I would say the majority of guys that I've ever had this conversation with, most of them tended to share this. So, For me, what that looks like is I refuse to use my image simulator, what do I call that?
The experience simulator?
The what?
The experience simulator?
Yeah. I refuse to use my experience simulator when a thought or image like that comes up. And that's something that I first started playing with back in my teens is, okay, I do have sort of a channel-changing knob like the TV had back then. You don't see them today, but they had them back then. You don't like what's on the station, you go up, turn the knob, change the channel, all right? Well, our knob, so to speak, is our experience simulator. It's how we try something on before we buy it or before we do it or don't do it, okay? The problem, and this is also based on wonderful research, I know at least one of the major articles was in Scientific American, But the issue is that our experience simulator lies all the time, okay? You know, and the example I've used a lot is like going out to get a pizza, and when I'm thinking about it, all I see is that beautiful pizza, and I can smell it, and it smells wonderful, and then I'm going to taste it, and it's going to just be perfect, and I'm going to get sat down in my recliner to eat it right when the game is starting, and it's just going to be perfect, man, this great scenario. I'm going to go get it and be back in like 8 minutes tops, no traffic, no problems, whatever. So I decide to do it, and then I do it, and the experience isn't anything like that. Doesn't take 8 minutes. It takes 27 minutes. I get all soaking wet. They didn't have the pizza I wanted. The game has already been going on. It doesn't taste that good. I wish I'd never done the whole thing at all. All right? And The problem there was really not the experience simulator. It was that I believed the experience simulator. That's the problem. The experience simulator is just a machine. It does whatever it's programmed into it. But with the devolution of our memories over thousands of years, what's programmed into it is a whole lot of stuff, again, approximately 50%, that's not true. Well, you think you might come out with some errors of judgment when 50% of the data you're basing your actions on is incorrect? I mean, good cow, no engineer would start to build a bridge or a building or anything like that. You know, if the sub guy said to him, well, we've got numbers on everything, but best I can tell, about 50% of our numbers are wrong. Well, the contractor foreman of the job, you know what he would say? Well, we're not digging one shovel of dirt until we know those numbers are right, or we're going to waste time, waste energy, waste resources, lose money, whatever. Well, the problem with your experience simulator, at least for most people, is it lies all the time. So when I was maybe my teenager, I'd never thought of the words experience simulator in my life. I just realized God has given me a knob to change the channel, so to speak, and that is that I can choose to think and focus about something else. Now, it might be really hard to do that, especially if I'm 14 and there's a lovely 14-year-old girl sitting across from me eating lunch. I mean, it might be like the hardest thing in the world to get that channel off of that girl and, you know, thinking thoughts like that. But you can, and it's one of those things that takes practice. And the best way I know to do it is when you start thinking things that you shouldn't think. You have thoughts, but you don't want to keep them. The best thing I've ever found is turn it into a prayer. Don't change the words. Don't change anything that you're thinking or feeling. But address God, address your heart if you don't believe in God, but turn it into a prayer with the exact same words. Now, probably for a week or week and a half, if this is something you really struggle with a lot, it's going to drive you crazy because every 3 minutes you're going to have to be doing another prayer because it's come back onto your channel. Well, yeah, it is going to drive you crazy for about a week and a half, but if you do this right, then it's not going to drive you crazy for the next 30 years. That's a pretty good trade. So every time you start thinking that thing, turn it into a prayer and change the channel to something you feel is right and beautiful and lovely and good and positive and stuff like that. And then I would say beyond that, it's not really your responsibility. Okay? Once you turn it into a prayer, ask God to help you with that, ask your heart to please help you with that, take it away, whatever. You're doing what you should be doing as far as those thoughts are concerned. So whether they stay negative or turn positive, you're still doing what you should be doing. What I have observed with people, and I'm talking, I have no idea, because I've been teaching this for probably 14 years. It's got to be well into the thousands. What I've heard consistently from my clients is, yeah, for a week and a half or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 5 weeks, it about drove me nuts. But then there came a point where it's almost like everything just stopped. All of a sudden, I quit having those thoughts. Well, what's going on there is your unconscious mind, which is a million times more powerful than your conscious intention, which is I don't want to have these thoughts. Your unconscious is a million times more powerful, but with your conscious mind, you can make that choice to turn it into a prayer and change the channel. When you consistently do that, there comes a point in time where it's like your unconscious mind gives up. And it says something like, okay, Santo, we know you're going to turn it into a prayer. We know you're going to change the channel, so we're going to quit sending you that. We're going to start sending you, you know, love, joy, peace things. And when that happens, it can change everything in your life that day. It is so powerful. But you've got to be consistent with the turning it into a prayer, changing the channel, taking control of your experience simulator, not just letting it do whatever it does based on 50% data that's incorrect.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that's super helpful. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Johanna, I'm going to have to go.
Okay, Alex. Okay, God bless. I'm glad it worked today.
Okay, love you, everybody. Thank you.
Love you, Alex. All right, so we're going to go ahead and open the line for anyone who would like to get a custom code or a custom trilogy. You can raise your hand by pressing star 2 on your phone. That's going to raise your hand, and I'll be able to unmute your line and get you a custom trilogy or a custom code. So raise your hand by pressing star 2 on your phone. And my computer's acting a little slow, so let's see. Anybody? Okay, at the moment, I do not see any hands raised. All right, so I guess that's going to be it for today. I want to thank you all for being here, and I hope we see you again next week. God bless.